The Blue Bomber Podcast.
That is, wow, that's fantastic. I like that.
Make sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes or at cjob.com.
Greg Mackling, the voice of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Derek Taylor joining us on the Blue Bomber Podcast, as well as the host of the 680 CJOB Sports Show and an optimal, critical contributor to Blue Bomber coverage, Blue Bomber game days, pregame, halftime, in between, before, all around, Christian O'Mell. Christian, thanks for taking time to join us today.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to finally get the invite.
See, Derek, I knew he was sitting by his mailbox waiting for snail mail. And then I thought, you know what? Perhaps we should invite him digitally, like the newfangled way for the kid.
Well, it's just one of the truisms of Winnipeg radio is when Greg Mackling talks, everybody listens, right? When you throw out the invite, people can't wait to accept.
I wish that were true, DT. I know you have way better facts than that for us today. So let's move on from that most likely falsehood to something that's undeniable. Friday night, IG Field, Toronto Argonauts, Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Their first meeting since the Grey Cup. We've spoken at length how much of a travesty that is based on CFL scheduling. We'll move on from that, at least for the time being. This is a massive game in terms of these two teams measuring themselves against one another, if nothing else, DT.
I would think probably more for fans than for the players, but like if you're Toronto, you probably want to keep stuff hidden because you're already clinched. You're not your number one berth into the playoffs. But I think for us as fans to go, okay, well, what does our team look like against, you know, a real team? Bomber fans go, okay, well, we lost one to BC and we clobbered BC and there's a third meeting coming. But all these other teams kind of will have their issues and problems, and they don't really look like they're going to be trouble in the playoffs. But Toronto, 12-1, and oh my gosh, okay, well, how good are we really? Have we been underestimated by, you know, the league? Have we been overestimated? Where are we really? I think for fans of both teams, I think it's probably the biggest impact in this one of like, okay, well, who are we really? As if we could determine that in 60 minutes.
Christian, it feels as though perhaps the Toronto Argonauts have captured some attention in the Toronto, maybe super saturated sports marketplace. I know it wasn't a sold out crowd by any measure, but there was an atmosphere last week at BMO, at least it seemed to be on television. Are the Argonauts A, the real deal, and B, are people excited outside of Winnipeg about this game?
I think the answer to A is the Argos are for real. I think that's for sure. I think we've seen over the large enough sample size of this season that Chad Kelly is a pretty solid quarterback. He's got some weapons, and sure, the East is pretty bad and they've been beating up on the East pretty good, but I don't think you can argue that the Argonauts are some kind of fraud, right? I think they are legitimate, and if they play the Bombers 10 times, you know, one team might win six, but which team is it? I'm not sure. As for do other people care about this game, the bar is so low, I think, in Toronto for us looking into Toronto and thinking, oh, look, it's not sold out, but there's an atmosphere. Like, that's the bar we have for Toronto as opposed to Winnipeg, where it's sold out for the third time this season. And they're just the energy in the city is just so different. And you look at the Blue Jays, they're probably going to make the playoffs. And then Maple Leaf season starts, and then Raptor season starts, though the Raptors aren't probably going to be any good this year. And then next thing you know, if the Grey Cup is here in mid-November in Hamilton, do people in Toronto care? Because they could make that trip. It's real close compared to last year. But if the Leafs are, I don't know, I haven't looked at the NHL schedule, the Leafs are playing that day, then people aren't going to care. But I think people are curious across the country to see this game. It is a Grey Cup rematch. But I also think that a lot of people just don't care about the Argos. I don't think they move the needle nationally nearly as much as the Bombers and Riders do, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, Derek Taylor, because this is, you know, potentially a Grey Cup preview. It's obviously a Grey Cup rematch, but, you know, a BC Lions, I guess, are back in this conversation. For the last several weeks, we thought it was, you know, Winnipeg, Toronto, and everyone else. Is it again Winnipeg, Toronto, and BC in terms of the echelons of teams in the CFL?
I think you have to consider it that, because, I mean, BC is tied with Winnipeg, right, in the standings, and the winner of next week's game is probably going to finish first in the West. So I think you have to, despite the fact that, man, BC's had some shady results in the last few weeks. Just some, really, you beat the Elks by 8 and you almost lost to the Red Blacks. Yee. And you, I mean, Montreal went kind of toe to toe with you. And oh, before that, you lost to the Tiger Cats. It's been a rough, I guess, 5 weeks with a bye in there for the Lions. But I think just record wise, you have to consider that, you know, if they win October 6th in Vancouver, they're maybe going to be the number one seed. That's something you can't ignore.
So there are lots of obvious places we could take this conversation and setting up the game. And of course, we'll do that for 2 hours leading up to the game at 7 o'clock on Friday night, beginning at 5 on your radio home of the Blue Bombers, 680 CJOB. But I suspect these abnormalities that you and I were discussing before I hit record, Derek Taylor, are going to be something that you talk about Friday and maybe even leading up to it. Spill the beans right now. And that has to do with the number of ways, the different ways, and the large number of touchdowns the Winnipeg Blue Bombers offense and special teams have given up.
Yeah, it's really weird. So Winnipeg is the highest scoring offense on a per game basis and the lowest points allowed defense on a per game basis. And it went, okay, well, that's interesting. But Toronto overall has more points. Okay, well, that's interesting. So I looked into that and you go, well, Toronto has 4 touchdowns by its defense and 4 on returns from Javon Lake, who is crushing it this year. But okay, well, how many has Winnipeg had? Okay, well, 2. Well, how many have they allowed? That was where I started to go. How many touchdowns have the Winnipeg defense and special teams allowed? Because I thought, well, the return has been one of the things that we've been talking about with the Bombers, the return game against them. Ooh, they can't cover anybody. But they've not allowed a return touchdown, just the blocked punt that Jamison Sheehan had in the end zone that was scored for a touchdown. Apart from that, but I went, wait a minute, okay, they've allowed 7 touchdowns on their offense and special teams. 7. 2 fumbles and 4 interceptions. 4 pick sixes plus 2 fumble sixes. The offense, while it has scored 49 touchdowns for the Bombers, it's actually allowed 6 of its own, which that just seemed incredibly high to me, because your offense is supposed to score points, not ship 42 in the other direction. But that's this year's Bombers team.
Well, when I consider the number of points scored and the number of points against, you know, I knew it was an high number that the Blue Bomber defense was not responsible for. I didn't realize that number ends up being 7 times 6, 42 points that the Blue Bomber defense are not responsible for. So at the very most, the Winnipeg Blue Bomber defense have given up 250 points through 14 games. And you can say what you want about what happened in Hamilton 2 Saturdays ago. That's a good defense, and I think that highlights it even more.
Well, yeah, the CFL breaks it all down, and opponent offensive touchdowns, Winnipeg has allowed 20. That's the best in the league by a good margin. It's actually 8 fewer than Toronto has allowed. And sure, Toronto's played one less game, but, I mean, they've only allowed 20 touchdowns through their defense. Their offense has added 6 more. It's just so weird. And it just kind of, you know, why are the Bombers 10-4 and not 12-2 like last year? Well, a couple of pick sixes here and a fumble six here and another fumble six here and a late pick six against Ottawa. And you go, oh, okay, well, those weird bounces that the Bombers didn't have against them last year, they are certainly having against them this season. So I just kind of was thinking forward to what'll be the 3 keys to the game that I do with Ed Tate every game. And I go, okay, well, the offense has to, I mean, if you turn the ball over against the Argos, you have the potential to get punished. So taking care of the ball, I don't know if it'll be more important at any point this season, non-playoff edition, than it will be on Friday.
Christian, DT, mentioning the fact that, you know, some goofy wins for BC. So you pair a goofy win against Ottawa with a goofy loss for Winnipeg against Ottawa. And that's now all of a sudden the difference in the standings again that we're talking about, which makes next Friday in Vancouver relevant versus making it potentially irrelevant. It just goes to show the margins are thin, unusual, and unpredictable in the Canadian Football League.
For sure. But even if BC lost that Ottawa game, next week's game would be relevant, because if they were to beat Winnipeg, then they're tied.
Well, if the Bombers had held on and beat Ottawa 7 or 8 weeks ago. If those two games had gone the way they were supposed to go, Christian, if you heard the entire premise of my point, you'd have no choice but to agree with me.
Of course. Sorry, Greg, you're the host. I need to acquiesce. Yes.
No need to acquiesce.
I mean, that's football, though. You could go through every season and, well, I mean, look at Ottawa, right? They're 4-10, and, you know, four of their losses should be wins and three of their wins should be losses. And that's football, right? But for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers now at 10-4, I'm really looking at this week's game against Toronto. If they lose, now they're probably behind BC in the standings.
Sure they are.
Yeah, you win and you get the tiebreaker and then you're tied again, but there's no margin for error. And for the Bombers going into this game against Toronto, the thing I'm most curious about is, does Toronto care about this game? Because they have everything locked up. I like what Derek said about not showing too much in case they play again in the Grey Cup. The Bombers need this game so much more than Toronto does. But if you're the Argos, you don't want to just lay down and lose by 30. So I don't know, how much is it pride? How much is it like this is the last real good game against a good team that they're going to play till the playoffs? I'm really curious to see about that. But for the Blue Bombers, I mean, maybe it's better that Toronto has nothing to play for.
DT, pick up on that.
I would think it sure doesn't hurt, right? Because I don't know if there's any playbook for how Toronto should be approaching these final six games of the season, right? They've got their playoff spot locked up. They sat out AJ Ouellette last week. They healthy scratched him. They're starting running back and borderline star running back. They just sat him out six games from the end of the season, presumably to give him some rest. I don't know. Maybe those Montreal teams earlier in the century had this dilemma, but what do you do with six games where the results don't matter in the standings, and how do you approach that for it? So we're kind of making this up as we go along. I just think if I'm Toronto and I go, well, it'd be nice to, you know, go toe to toe and see what we're made of. The next time we play these guys, if at all, we'll be back in the Grey Cup, and I want to have some surprises against them. I want them to, you know, they'll be able to see obviously what we put on film the other 17 games that we play, but I don't want them to see it in person. I don't want them to get their sense of, okay, well, this much space between this guy and that guy, this stack of receivers means this. I don't want any of that, because the next time if it happens again, the stakes will be the highest they can possibly be. So I'm just so curious with how Toronto will approach that. I wouldn't do it like preseason of, okay, it's only zone run right and zone run left, and that's all we're doing today, and we're only running four verticals twice, and we're not showing them anything else. I don't know if you go that far, because I mean the league would probably want this to be, you know, the 42-40 that it could be. But if I'm Toronto, everything is about, you know, November 19th, and I won't say out loud that I don't care about you know, week 17 in Winnipeg, but in my heart I'll know that I'm gonna want to keep this one a little lower than I might normally.
Well, Wade Miller may not want Blue Bomber fans to listen to this last 3 minutes of this podcast, because you've got almost 33,000 people coming out to IG Field on Friday night that are going to be expecting a showdown between the two top teams in the league, and one may give a garbage crap. Kyle Milroy, help me out here with a beep, and the other team may not. So that's an interesting part of this discussion. We'll shelve it for now, And I want to ask about Willie Jefferson. I know you wanted to talk about Willie J last week, DT, and we just didn't get around to it. Is there concern about his lack of production over the last several weeks?
I would have to think so. It's unusual, right? Like, once again, no sack. And is that now seven games in a row without a sack that Willie's gone? And you go, okay, well, he's knocked down a pass or two along the way, and he's getting a couple of tackles. But the thing that, I mean, Matthew Betts is having the same thing in BC, that early season hot start is gone. And there hasn't been, on the Bomber side, a ton to replace it. So whether the concern is, okay, well, Willie's, what's happened to Willie, or it's more of, well, what's happened to this defense and its vicious pass rush. I'm not sure which one of those is the way to focus on it and is as the correct answer, but it certainly stands out that, oh, wait a minute. I mean, Willie had two hands on Taylor Powell the last time we saw him, and that wasn't a sack. And that reminded me that he hadn't had a sack in quite some time. And it's unusual for a guy who has so many ways to impact the game to not have nearly as many impact plays these last, say, seven games as he had the previous seven games.
Christian, we've made a lot of what Jackson Jeffcoat does, the difference he makes in terms of the play of Willie Jefferson. At least that's our interpretation. That's our thought, that the inclusion of 94 makes five better. 94 missed last week, but he's been in the lineup otherwise. Does that dissolve, make that theory disappear altogether, or is there something else at play?
I'm a big believer that if Jackson Jeffcoat's in, he lifts all boats. I think he makes Willie Jefferson better because he's just someone you have to worry about as well. On the other side, I think we've seen it anecdotally at the very least, and I don't know if the stats back it up, but it just seems like when he is out there, that pass rush is different. And not just Willie Jefferson, but other people as well. Cameron Lawson getting involved. We saw Celestin Haba come back last week and play for Jeffcoat and get a sack, but ultimately the pass rush wasn't enough against Hamilton. And you see Jake Thomas, whoever it is, Teadrick Hansen is coming back soon. So if they're fully healthy, and Jeffcoat's a big part of that, then this pass rush is going to be a problem. But when he's the missing link, they're just not as good. We've seen it. Last year we saw it when he missed more time than this year. And I think that if he is back, if he is healthy enough in the playoffs, which is where you really need him, then this pass rush you'd expect to be different. And whether Jefferson gets a sack or not, that doesn't mean he's not a factor. He can still be making the quarterback's life miserable, forcing the quarterback to go to the other side and Jeffcoat's waiting for him, that kind of thing. But I definitely think as Jeffcoat goes, I think this pass rush goes.
Blue Bombers have brought in another defensive lineman and added, Kuani Deng?
I haven't met him yet, but I'd go Coney. Yeah.
Okay. 6'5", not a small individual, coming out of California. So, you know, they don't have to admit anything to us, but I would say that that's evidence that there's a recognition that perhaps something else you've been talking about with regard to that defensive line is at play here. And that's the lack of people to rotate in and out of that lineup. And perhaps it's taking its toll physically on some of the Blue Bombers' best players.
Yeah, for sure. That's now three defensive ends that they have on the practice roster right now. And that's carrying, I mean, Jackson was on the injured list, so four carried three in the game, seven. They're definitely looking at their options. They use Damian Jackson there, so eight potentially guys to have in there. And how much, you know, which guys are brought in to focus on special teams potentially, which guys are brought in because they believe their pass rushers is something the coaches will work on. But yeah, it's a thing. I was just, while Christian was talking, I was just looking. First seven games, 25 sacks from the Bombers. Last seven games, 15 sacks from the Bombers. And you go, okay. Well, that's why they're not tops in the league in that stat. And it's just, it's unusual. I mean, the results certainly aren't terrible, right? With 10 wins. And like we talked about, the fewest points allowed by the defense on a per game basis. but it's just got to be there. And I think it's one of the frustrations for fans has been, okay, well, if we're not getting this pressure, we're not getting these sacks, and Willie's not able to, you know, Willie hasn't got a sack in 7 games, why aren't we using these other bodies in rotation on the defensive line? Why are we carrying Damian Jackson as an American fullback who sort of rushes the passer, whatever it is, 6 times a game? Why aren't we using more bodies, you know, to get after the quarterback when other teams are carrying 8 defensive linemen? The Bombers are trying to get away with 6, and there's no effect on the quarterbacks. There's obviously a million things that go into these decisions, but it's one I think that's causing frustration, especially after games like the Hamilton one, where Taylor Powell looked really good and really unaffected by the pressure the Bombers were able to create.
Christian, is this where Teodric Hansen comes in? The Bombers, I think, are missing him and his impact, because he was a guy that they could put in, rotate in and out, and he could really make a difference from time to time.
Yeah, I think one of the strengths of this team over the last few years in this great golden era of the Bombers has been their defensive line depth, where they've been able to bring in guys, and that's how Casey Sales ends up getting a big contract in Hamilton. That's how Steve Richardson ends up getting a big contract in BC, and unfortunately he's been hurt, but these guys that they've been able to secure and bring in and rotate, and I think Cameron Lawson kind of fits that mold right now. Ricky Walker in there too, but they'd love to have more. And Teodric Hansen was a big part of that last year, up until he tore his Achilles in September. So to have him back is another body that you trust. Is he going to be the Teodric Hansen we know right away? We'll see when he actually gets in the lineup, but just to have another body in there to help them absolutely can't hurt, because having that pass rush be fresh is something that has been a big asset for this team over the last few years.
Argos coming in, as we mentioned, 11-1, looking pretty good. Chad Kelly, I get the hype to a certain extent. I'm a little bit of a fan, but I also at times just like, really? I guess I'm still not sold on the guy. Should I be sold on him, Christian?
Well, I have a couple ways of looking at it. One, the bar of quarterback excellence in this league is very low right now. I think after Zach Collaros and Chad Kelly, you got Vernon Adams, who can be good sometimes, but then he has a game where he throws 6 interceptions. And then what, right? There's not a lot else out there. But Chad Kelly helped his team win a Grey Cup last year. He came in relief and made some plays. He's good on his feet. But Derek on my show last week said something that I really kind of stuck with me. Is he the most outstanding player, or is he a good player on the most outstanding team? Because Toronto right now, the way they've been winning hasn't necessarily been all the quarterback play. They have an incredible defense that turns the ball over at a remarkable rate, and they've had the best special teams unit in the CFL. But that's not to say Kelly hasn't been good, right? He's been able to, the deep ball that he's been able to connect on over and over and over again has been really successful for this team. I think it's no doubt he's going to be the East most outstanding player. I think, I don't know what the odds are right now, but I would probably guess it's going to be him to be MOP, unless over the next 6 weeks, they don't really do much, right? It's possible that maybe he only plays 3 of the next 6 games, and maybe Collaros then puts up such huge stats because he's going to be playing more, because Winnipeg's going to need those wins. But Derek's also made the point before too about voter fatigue. Collaros just keeps winning it. That we've seen in every league. When someone wins a couple times, there's a natural tendency to look for something else, to see what else is out there. What is the new narrative? And the narrative this year is Chad Kelly has burst onto the scene, and he's leading this Grey Cup team to hope, trying to get a back-to-back title. And it's his first full season in the CFL, and look what he's doing. And they keep winning, and he keeps throwing touchdowns, and he keeps rushing for touchdowns. And he's been very good, but I understand the trepidation at the same time.
Derek, I think a couple of podcasts ago, I tried to make the point that, you know, if I'd had a vote, at Chad Kelly would have got my vote as most outstanding player in the Grey Cup last year, just based on what he did with the limited time in the game. So he does have an impact. I'm not questioning that. Maybe it's the how versus the what.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I still 2 weeks, like I guess I still think a couple weeks later that it is the best way to describe Chad is that he's the quarterback of maybe the best team in the Canadian Football League. Because I mean, looking at his numbers, you go, okay, 69% completion is real. That's good. 10.5 yards per pass attempt is ridiculously good. He and Kolaris are kind of passing that back and forth of who's going to lead in yards per attempt. This number sticks out to me that Chad Kelly's been sacked only 9 times this season. That seems ridiculous that you could get through. He missed much of one game. You could get through, 13 games or 12 games and only be sacked 9 times is kooky talk. That's fewer than Mason Fine, who hasn't been the full-time starter in SAS this year. I think Chad's been good. Like he threw one deep post route last week against Hamilton on the run. You go, okay, that's perfectly, you know, your feet aren't set. You're in stride and you hit the receiver perfectly. Let him roll for the touchdown. Dejon Brissett scored. And I'm like, okay, well, this is really good. He has all these tools and people will say, well, he's got 8 rushing touchdowns as well. So that equals the number of touchdowns Kolaris has produced. I don't care about quarterback sneak touchdowns because then we'd have to get into the is Caleb Evans the MOP of the league conversation, and we're never going there. I mean, for everything that Toronto offense has, like Chad, I mean, certainly enhances it and makes it work better. Could Toronto better survive losing Chad Kelly than the Bombers could survive losing Zach Kolaris? I think the Bombers would be damaged more. That makes me still lean to Kolaris as the most outstanding player in the league. And I can beat you over the head with some other stuff as to why I think so too. But it seems like there's a real sentiment to every time Zach has a game like the one against Hamilton. Well, he's throwing interceptions more than he did last year. Yeah, Chad Kelly's got 11 picks too, which is just 2 fewer than Zach. So what are we really complaining about here? It's Zach makes magical plays. Chad Kelly has had less time to make magical plays in his career, but he's, I don't know, like what magnitude versus what you thought Chad Kelly would be, how much better or thought he might be, how much better is Chad Kelly? Like twice as good, 5 times as good?
Yeah, that's a good because point.
I had a bet. I took a flyer at 7-1 that Kelly would be awful and the Argos would win 4-6 games this season. And that bet was I thought it's at least worth the risk, right? Because we've seen a million guys come into this league with hype and oh, he's the next big thing, and virtually all of them strike out. Kelly has been a stud and absolutely deserves that highest paid player in the league contract if you're trying to forecast the next few years. So I don't regret making that wager. And for the good of the CFL, I'm happy to see that it was wrong and that Chad Kelly is really, I don't know that I want to say great yet because I want more, but GMAC, you said it. They don't win the Grey Cup last year if McLeod Bethel Thompson continued in that game. So I kind of would have been with you on the backdoor. Chad Kelly's the MVP of the Grey Cup ballot.
I always look for the sneaky fun stuff anyway, and I like to look for guys that are sneaky good and to recognize individuals and players that have an impact that others ignore. And I know sometimes that's impossible to do, but I will go down to my last breath. Not that I, you know, want to argue about the 2022 Grey Cup with too many people about how it went down, but I think he would have been the more correct choice. But anyway, Friday night, IG Field. Anything you want to give away right now in terms of what you'll be bringing us on Friday night, Christian, in terms of your thoughts and the setup of this game?
Well, I think my main thought going into the game, and this isn't giving anything away, I've said this before, has just been how good the Bombers have been coming off buys and coming off losses, right? They've been almost unbeatable coming out of losses the last few years. In the Zach Kolaris era, if you will, they don't lose back-to-back games. They just don't, right? They had the 2 at the end of 21 where they lost that they didn't care about, and that's it. And it's been super impressive. And after bye weeks, I think Justin Dunk had the stat after their last win after a bye week, which was the BC blowout. I think he's 7-0 since 2018 with 15 touchdowns and 2 interceptions and 2,000 passing yards. So he's been incredible. You know he's going to want to bounce back. You know this team wants to bounce back. They never talk about revenge, but they definitely know what happened in the Grey Cup last year. And they were very coy about revenge in the Banjo Bowl. And what did they do? They absolutely mutilated the Rough Riders. Now, Saskatchewan is nowhere near as good as Toronto is, but I think there is an aspect of trying to get them back for what happened in November. So I really struggle to see Toronto winning this game, honestly, just because I think the Bombers are going to be so motivated to come out and make amends for what happened last year and what happened in Hamilton 2 weeks ago. They're going to get the win, and I'd be surprised to see them lose, but they have to take care of the football because Toronto, as we mentioned, if they turn the ball over against this team, they're going to make you pay, and that's one way that they can lose this game. But if they're careful with the football, I can't really see them losing.
DT on the Banjo Bowl, the return matchup, the what do you call it now? The primary matchup, the main event of the back to back.
Yes, the Labor Day game is the Banjo Bowl warm up game now, officially as per Doug Brown of this year, and I think we're driving that one home. So the Banjo Bowl is the big one.
Okay, so I commented, obviously, Saturday game, there was all sorts of reasons and ability for people to get to the University of Manitoba campus early on a Saturday versus a Friday night. But in stadium atmosphere on Banjo Bowl was second to none. It was absolutely tremendous. Any reason to expect we won't see something similar on Friday night?
Oh, I absolutely think we will. I think as much as, you know, Argo fans aren't a ton of them roaming around, and this game was in Toronto, the atmosphere might be more subdued. Like, every Bomber fan in Winnipeg knows what a big deal this game is. Every Bomber fan can read the standings and go, oh, 12-1. Interesting. Clinched your first overall in the East. Interesting. You're coming to our house. Very interesting. I can have a $35 sausage on a burger covered with bacon or whatever in Doritos, whatever the meal is. Very interesting. I think it's going to be nuts, and I'm so glad for it. Third sellout for the Bombers this year. This is what happens when you are, you know, this good for this long, is people respond. So yeah, I think it's just going to be bonkers because, yeah, everybody who listens to our pregame show, everybody who's listening to the sports show with Christian, everybody knows that I've been saying it for weeks. Like, I can't focus on what's right in front of me because I can't wait for September 29th against the Argos. And now it's here. And everybody, I think, gets it.
Will Andrew Harris be here?
He's on the 6-game injured list, so he's not going to play. Is there a point to bring him? I kind of hope so, because it's going to be the last chance. I don't know if Toronto's thinking about it, but I hope so, because I mean, that guy's going in the Ring of Honor one day, and he deserves whatever fans believe about the breakup between player and team. That guy deserves a massive standing ovation from the crowd in Winnipeg.
Andrew Harris going in the Ring of Honor, Christian?
Yeah, I think so. I think you look at the Ring of Honor, and a lot of the time it's guys that were here a long time. It's not like he was here, you know, for his whole career, but the impact he had, he was one of the first guys that was like a big time guy that came back and really jump started this rebirth of the team, right? A serious running back from here, grew up here, right? I think the local part of it cannot be overstated. And to help break the drought, he was the best player on this team for a number of years and kind of was the heart and soul of this team as well. So I don't think there's any doubt that 33 belongs up there at some point in the future, for sure.
Give the ball more to Brady Oliveira. Let Zach Collaros do what he does best. Unleash that Blue Bomber defensive line. I cannot wait until Friday night. Christian, thank you for this. Appreciate you jumping on.
My pleasure. I've got a cat and a dog on me right now, so everything is good.
Life is good. And how about you, Taylor? What's the animal count in your proximity as we sign off?
Penny just came. She's great for punching me in the stomach and or groin region because she's still a pup. So she came by to check in just at the end as I got very excited talking about what the crowd will be like on Friday.
All right, guys. Thanks for this. So that's it Don't forget to download, subscribe, and share the Blue Bomber podcast. And also, in case you didn't already know, Monday night's Coach's Show with Derek Taylor and Mike O'Shea will be automatically uploaded to the Blue Bomber podcast. So if you want to catch a rerun of that or catch it and listen to it at your leisure, you can do so by subscribing to the Blue Bomber podcast. We will recap this week's game next week and look ahead in the Canadian Football League, focusing on, of course, your Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Thank you for spending some time with us.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.